This presentation identifies and analyzes the context in which violence against LGBTI plus children occurs and the empowerment strategies adopted to address such violence. The contexts analyzed include education, healthcare, the family, the public space, and the media. Video produced by Beatriz San Román, Marisela Montenegro, and Joan Pujol, researchers and lecturers at the Autonomous University of Barcelona. Social norms and values regulate our daily behavior. Norms and values that can prove harmful to groups that do not adhere to hegemonic norms. The daily roots of patriarchal, cisgender, and heteronormative norms generate different forms of violence towards non-normative expressions of gender identity, gender expression, and sexual orientation. The characteristics of LGBTI violence vary according to the social context. In addition, forms of violence and their experience vary according to the social characteristics of the people on the receiving end of it. Due to their different and diverse social, institutional, and relational makeups, LGBTI plus children suffer from specific forms of violence and experience it very differently. Violence that also varies according to the social context in which it occurs. Therefore, it is important to highlight both the interconnectedness of the violence suffered in different contexts and to identify the specific forms that violence takes in each context. Identifying the general and specific aspects of LGBTI plus violence against children allows forms of empowerment to be developed that address these forms of violence. Hence, this module analyzes the characteristics of LGBTI plus violence against children in five relevant settings, namely education, health, the family, the public space, and the media. It is a truism that the educational context is fundamental in children's socialization and that violence has an extremely damaging effect. However, the analyses of violence in the educational context tends to focus on the institutions that provide primary and secondary education. In fact, the vast majority of children and young people spend much of their time in these institutions, and the presence of institutional violence could exert a frightening and detrimental effect. At the same time, we must bear in mind that multiple measures to prevent LGBTI plus violence are already being implemented in educational institutions, while many incidents of violence against LGBTI plus children occur in informal settings. We must therefore develop a broader perspective of what is considered the educational context that includes those informal spaces where dominant values and norms are learned, reproduced, and questioned. Attention must be given to those everyday social interactions among classmates, sometimes without adult supervision, in which children and young people socialize and create informal norms. It is thus essential to prevent LGBTI plus violence in these settings and to develop safer spaces for those children and young people that do not conform to gender normative models. In this regard, attention must be afforded to extracurricular activities, such as sports or leisure activities, and socialization on social networks. Bullying constitutes a common form of violence within educational institutions and refers to recurrent violent and/or hostile behaviors against children or young people on account of their sexual orientation, gender identity, expression, or variations in real or perceived sexual characteristics. These behaviors range from name-calling and isolation to physical assault. Depending on the target, bullying against LGBTI plus children and young people can be described as lesbophobia, gayphobia, biphobia, transphobia, or interphobia. Despite the different forms of violence, victims of bullying experience significant psychological distress, which includes depression, low self-esteem, lack of concentration, decline in academic achievement, truancy, school dropout, fewer opportunities for higher education, lack of qualified employment, and self-harm. The psychological acceptance of these forms of interpersonal and institutional violence produces internalized homophobia. Cyberbullying refers to harassment that takes place on social networks and harassment that may also occur in face-to-face interactions. Cyberbullying inflicts intentional and repeated harm through social media and electronic communication. It includes behaviors such as insults, offensive expressions, threats, dissemination of embarrassing personal details, images, or public exposure of aspects related to the person's sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression. Bullying and cyberbullying can become especially serious if educational institutions lack internal procedures to identify and intervene in such situations. Silencing and neglecting LGBTI plus bullying contributes to the damaging normalization of peer violence. The customary lack of early family support for LGBTI plus bullying victims can obstruct resilience processes to overcome the psychological effects of bullying. As mentioned previously, bullying and cyberbullying can become especially pervasive if educational institutions lack internal procedures to prevent violence against LGBTI plus children and young people. In addition, while institutional settings are aware of physical violence, the presence and effects of symbolic violence are less noticeable. Two aspects in the organization of educational institutions can play a decisive role in the personal and collective well-being of LGBTI plus children and young people, namely representation and recognition. Schools should reflect and represent society's diversity. Activists and scholars point out the lack of diverse representation of LGBTI plus people in school curricula and among school staff. Textbooks and other instructional materials rarely consider diversity related to non-normative gender identity and gender expression. Likewise, there are no references to LGBTI plus families and, by default, heterosexuality is assumed both for the authors studied and for the centre staff. According to the European Union Agency for Fundamental Rights, 2016, teachers from European countries consider that there is an absence of objective information on sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, and variations in sexual characteristics. The insufficient information can lead to low levels of awareness and lower levels of confidence among professionals to address these issues. LGBTI plus underrepresentation and insufficient information and awareness of staff reinforce cisgender and heterosexual norms and promote systemic cis-heteronormativity. In class dynamics, this absence makes it difficult to open discussions related to gender and sexual option diversities, preventing negative representations or stereotypes from being tackled. To learn basic concepts in this area, and to become accustomed to employing non-offensive language. This lack of representation also hinders access to positive role models for LGBTI plus children and young people, and makes LGBTI plus learners more inclined to hide their sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression, or to act to adhere to the norm. Although these processes do not seem to imply direct violence, the systematic absence of LGBTI plus issues makes gender and sexual diversity invisible in educational contexts and can generate uneasiness, fear and isolation for gender non-normative people, as well as discriminatory practices. The absence of LGBTI plus issues in school curricula affects class dynamics. For instance, it makes it difficult to open discussions related to gender diversity and sexual options. It prevents negative representations or stereotypes of LGBTI plus people from being challenged. It does not provide basic concepts on sexual and gender diversity. And it thwarts the extensive use of non-offensive language. This insufficient representation hinders access to positive role models for LGBTI plus children and young people. It contributes to LGBTI plus students and teachers concealing their sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression should they do not conform to the prevailing norms. Although these processes do not appear to involve direct violence, the systematic absence of LGBTI plus issues conceals gender and sexual diversity in educational context. The absence of LGBTI plus topics and issues in school curricula may generate discomfort, fear and isolation among non-gender normative people, and encourage discriminatory practices against them. 2. Institutional settings and everyday interactions reproduce gender binary norms. For example, the school's physical design, such as bathrooms and changing rooms, a conventional dress code and appearance, and extracurricular activities, ballet or soccer. The social and historical shaping of our institutions incorporates values and practices that hinder the institutional recognition of difference. Gender roles define what types of behaviors and emotional expressions to expect from people assigned to particular categories of gender and sexuality. Students who do not conform to dominant gender roles or physical gender characteristics tend to experience different forms of violence. People may deliberately use the incorrect pronoun, first name, or gender identifier in an attempt to bully or belittle a student. The institution may also improperly name a student. Trans, non-binary, gender variant, and intersex students have the right to get their name and gender recognized by the educational institution. This calls for ensuring adequate administrative support and that all documents and certificates use the student's chosen name and gender. Lack of interest or appropriate procedures hinder social recognition and self-acceptance. Non-recognition processes can also be present. For example, in cases in which students are obliged to wear gender binary school uniforms that are inconsistent with the gender with which they identify. Even if there is no obligatory uniform, gender constraints affect what children can wear to school. Questioning such constraints can imply a very high cost for the individual. Moreover, when trans students, for example, are told to use facilities earmarked for students with disabilities rather than those for the gender they identify with, educational institutions are inflicting violence, obliging these students to make personal adjustments instead of examining the gender norms that underlie the division of toilet facilities. Fortunately, challenging the dominant rules and understanding of gender and sexuality offers opportunities for empowerment, a transformation effected by students, families, teachers, activists, and society as a whole. A better and inclusive society emerges from gender-sensitive educational environments that do not tolerate, but actively recognize, embrace, and celebrate diversity. LGBTI plus children, like all children and young people, should feel recognized, respected, and safe at school. Cisgender and heterosexual norms are also present in health services. Health institutions can inflict symbolic violence by treating users and patients as cis and heterosexual, and by reproducing gender binarism by classifying them into two clearly differentiable and anti-ethical sexes. What's more, the tendency to consider what is unusual or outside hegemonic norms as pathological has stigmatized LGBTI plus people and subjected them to inappropriate and potentially dangerous treatment. Cis heteronormative understandings and practices in health settings can have adverse effects on the person's physical and psychosocial well-being in terms of iatrogenesis. Iatrogenesis, that is, diseases and injuries caused by improper medical diagnoses and treatment. Research on the experiences of LGBTI plus young people and their families suggests diverse experiences of physical and symbolic violence, such as feeling invisible, unexpected, or unwelcome. While homosexuality was removed from the list of mental disorders, some health professionals may ignore the diversity of sexual orientations when interacting with children. Questions like, do you already have a boyfriend, girlfriend, can be experienced as exclusionary and harmful if cis-heteronormativity is presumed. taking heterosexuality for granted can also lead to poor or inappropriate practices in, for example, safe sex education. The effects on psychosocial or psychotherapeutic care may prove more serious when, for example, professionals assume that gender non-conforming or intersex children and young people are cis and endosexual. The symbolic violence of the unwanted name. In countries with strict or non-existent legal provisions for gender registration changes, health institutions may have protocols that allow the chosen name to be used. When this is not the case, seeing one's dead name on medical documentation or being mentioned with inappropriate pronouns can trigger anxiety and discomfort for children and young people, and the feeling that their identity is being rejected. Naming children and young people by their last name can avoid these distressing experiences at the cost of a more formal therapeutic relationship. Indeed, the best long-term solution is to facilitate gender registration change procedures. Pathologizing diversity. Cis heteronormative biases can lead to erroneously considering to be a disorder what is in fact human diversity. Inappropriate training can lead to iatronic clinical practices that can be particularly physically damaging to intersex or gender non-conforming children. Medical knowledge has traditionally classified human bodies into two mutually exclusive categories, using criteria related to karyotypic, hormonal, genital, and gonadal characteristics. Medical practice, on the other hand, defines gender based on genital appearance, vulva, or penis. The not-so-infrequent incongruity between physical and genetic sex has been controversial in sports competitions, where apparent female athletes have turned out to be genetically male. Since this inconsistency is only detected through genetic testing, people may have an unnoticed inconsistency between sexual, hormonal, and/or genital sex. Genetically, there are multiple chromosomal combinations in addition to 46,XX, female, and 46,XY, male, such as 45,XO, Turner syndrome, 47,XXY, Klinefelter syndrome, and so on. Chromosomal variations from the normative 46,XX to 46,XY are always considered syndromes, even if they do not usually have any phenotypic manifestations, as in triple X syndrome. We can also find chromosomal mosaicism, where different cells have different sex chromosome configurations. Besides that, the genitalia can have different phenotypic manifestations despite genetic inheritance. For example, people with 46,XY karyotype can have a female body if they are immune to the effect of testosterone. The norm of gender binarism bears serious consequences. For example, endosex-identified females may discover they are intersex at puberty when consulting their doctor about missing their first period. Or doctors and parents may resort to surgery when children are born with genitalia that do not fit the binary female-male phenotypic distinction. Intersex activism calls on the medical community to recognize the multiplicity of biological sex. Expressions of biological diversity should not be considered syndromes, disorders, or pathological abnormalities that should be addressed, especially when the intervention is directed at biological expressions that also appear in normative biological bodies. Intersex activism has accomplished major achievements, such as the UN and Council of Europe pronouncements against intersex child genital mutilation. However, intersex children's rights are still far from being fully recognized, and they still face different forms of violence in healthcare settings. As argued, gender binarism in healthcare contexts can lead to stigmatization and harmful treatments. Considering that a child's body not fitting into the gender binarism is anomalous, presenting malformations or syndromes bears a strong impact both on the child's self-concept and emotional security, and on parents' understanding of and actions towards their children. It is questionable that genetic syndromes are treatable with invasive surgical treatments that intervene in the person's physical appearance. After reviewing the medical literature published between 1955 and 1998, Anne Fausto Sterling, 2000, estimates that approximately 1.7% of people are born intersex, and that 1 in 2,000 babies are born with genital differences that can be unnecessarily considered liable to surgical intervention by medical personnel. It can be argued that it is less harmful to transform our biological understandings than it is to surgically transform those bodies that do not conform to these understandings. While everyone has the right to receive comprehensive and complete information regarding their biological characteristics and possibilities, intersex young people and their parents do not always obtain it. When clinicians lack adequate training, they do not provide the necessary information on the possible risks and benefits of the recommended treatment and possible non-binary alternatives. Furthermore, in some cases, they assume the authority to make the right decision as regards possible treatments. Other forms of violence, in addition to unnecessary treatment, include needless clinical tests and medical stigmatization. For example, inviting medical colleagues to attend clinical examinations, given the exceptional and rare nature of the case. Differences in national understandings and regulations affect the specificities of the violence against gender non-conforming children. While, until recently, most European countries censored gender expressions of children that did not correspond to the gender assigned at birth, today there are significant regional and national differences in the acceptance of gender diversity. Whereas some countries, such as Belgium, Portugal and Spain, have specific health protocols and services in place for trans people, other countries consider gender non-conforming behavior a symptom of a mental disorder. These differences may be present in different regions within the same country, and there may be considerable discrepancies in social perceptions and health services depending on the characteristics of each area. This is a situation that produces a series of systemic violence, inequalities in terms of treatment, basic information and recognition according to the country or area where a child grows up are evident. What's more, in certain countries, access to specific treatments requires a mental health diagnosis, while others deny gender blockers or cross-hormone therapies. National and regional differences give rise to a known diaspora of queer people towards those areas with inclusive understandings and better services for LGBTI plus people. Finally, some health services consider that the discomfort caused by the incongruity between gender identity and the sex assigned at birth, distress that becomes pathologized in terms of gender dysphoria, needs and should be resolved through a surgical intervention that transforms the body to the gender stereotype with which the person identifies. This form of transnormative discourse assumes that there is only one accepted way of being trans and hides the biological and experiential variability of our bodies, ultimately reproducing the sex-gender binary system. The imposition of this adult-centered perspective does not recognize the agency of children and their right to decide about their bodies and lives. Moving from a binary conception to a multiple and diverse understanding of gender paves the way for empowerment and inclusivity in the ways in which we experience sexual and gender identity. Families have a variety of forms and structures, and modern Western families tend to organise in nuclear families with two parents and their children, although single-parent families and extended families are common. Caring and supportive relationships are characteristic of family relationships. The function of the family is the biological and social production and reproduction of society. As such, the family constitutes a major point of conflict in the reproduction and transformation of social values. Family members who do not conform to cis heteronormative roles can hinder the productive and reproductive role of a family, such as when the family is ostracized by the community on account of the behavior of one of its members. Due to their interdependence with society, families tend to impose hegemonic gender roles and heterosexual normativity and generate conflict and rejection towards members who do not conform to said normativity. Due to the social transformation in cis heteronormative norms, family relationships in areas of gender identity, sexual orientation, and gender expression have generated different levels of conflict and violence. As a result of the dominance of cis heteronormative norms, LGBTI plus children and young people and their families may suffer from different forms of violence. Families can also be involved in discriminatory situations, such as in school or health contexts. These processes are not static, but are part of a continuous process of relational reconfigurations that offer opportunities for the empowerment of LGBTI plus children and young people, and to transform the practices and values of the family as a whole. Thanks to the progressive social acceptance of LGBTI plus rights, families and relatives can get involved in support groups or activist organizations, and can therefore play a part in the transformation of family and social values. The affirmation of a child's non-normative gender and/or sexuality can generate a wide range of violent reactions from other family members. These may involve physical and psychological violence, such as being thrown out of the home, parent disavowal, humiliation, insults, distancing, rejection of name change, secrecy, or denial towards extended family, for example, when coming out. These forms of macro and micro violence inflict specific and profound damage, since they occur in the environment closest to the person, an environment that should be a safe space. There are other forms of violence within family relations that are maybe less confrontational and upfront, but that can also deeply affect LGBTI plus children's well-being. Sometimes parents convey the idea that something is wrong with the child as they deny access to health services or medicine that could be useful, as in the case of trans people. Lack of support can also manifest itself through lack of protection against external violence, such as homophobic bullying, as well as open homophobic attitudes, even if they are not specifically directed at the child. All these forms of violence tend to generate frustration, isolation, self-devaluation, and internalized homophobia. All these negative effects can put the child at risk of self-harm or even of suicide. In addition to violence in the nuclear family, we must also consider the broader family context, such as close neighbors and friends, or the extended family. In these contexts, violence can occur, for example, through the prohibition of staying at a friend's house or isolation practices carried out by other close adults. Despite the harshness of the violence described, in some cases, the clash of expectations and its consequent conflicts can also be an opportunity to open up and freely discuss issues of sexuality and gender, and to work towards adjusting personal expectations within the family environment. Finally, as LGBTI plus children develop their lives in the family context, the discrimination they suffer from can be extended to the family as a whole, especially in small community contexts. In this regard, it is also necessary to point out that the stigma associated with gender and sexuality directed at non-normative people can affect the entire nuclear family or some of its members, giving rise to aggressive behaviors, symbolic violence, and/or social exclusion. The absence of adequate procedures to identify and manage discrimination against LGBTI plus children and deficient awareness raising measures on this issue among other families can generate community discrimination, such as in cases of bullying. These forms of institutional violence must be considered within the adequate coordination between schools and families. Lack of coordination that limits parental access to information regarding possible violent incidents involving their child, or information restrictions between family and school personnel, can be a form of institutional violence that alienates the family from important discussions and decisions. In addition, without widespread awareness throughout the educational community, violence against LGBTI plus children and families can trigger the phenomenon of victim blaming, where children and families are held responsible for the violence they endure. Families are also the target of institutional violence in healthcare settings. Insufficient information on the possible consequences of medical treatments for trans children, for example, can greatly disempower families when it comes to relevant decisions. The situation is more serious in the case of intersex newborns, where the traditional medical approach tends to pathologize babies born with variations in sexual characteristics and to guide parents towards normalizing surgeries, arguing from a position of expertise and using the child's well-being as an argument leaves little room for parents to discuss different possible alternatives and generates a form of symbolic violence by disempowering the family from the necessary agency to decide on the basis of all the relevant information what would be in the best interest of the newborn child. Public spaces can be a threatening place for young people who do not adhere to the norms of a cis heterosexual society. As they grow up and move around without the supervision of a parent or caring adult, they may be surprised at how some people react to non-normative gender expressions, such as two girls or two boys showing affection for one another. This is not to say that they will not experience different forms of violence when they are younger and/or with adult supervision. Nonetheless, being the object of teasing, disapproving glances, or verbal attacks by complete strangers when they are alone for the first time can be a frightening experience for a child or a teenager. As it becomes something recurrent in their lives, they may develop coping strategies. Nevertheless, these experiences convey the message that they are not welcome in society, that they are worse than others, and that the way they feel is wrong, or at least something to be hidden. These experiences can generate well-founded feelings of insecurity and the risk of physical or sexual assault. According to the latest EU LGBTI survey, among the 140,000 respondents over the age of 15 who responded, 5% have suffered physical or sexual assault for being LGBTI in the past 12 months. And 1 in 10 participants claim they have been the target of this type of violence in the 5 years previous to the survey. When asked where the last of these attacks took place, 51% reported that it was on the street, in a square, park or other public space, with an additional 10% on public transport and 12% in a cafe, restaurant, pub or club. Denial of access to private spaces, such as leisure facilities or clubs, because they do not conform to gender roles, constitutes a public form of violence. Laws against this type of discrimination exist in most countries, and filing a complaint in such situations empowers and supports victims. It is important for the victim to know that there is nothing wrong with the way they are, that these forms of discrimination are against the law, and that there are procedures to demand respect for one's rights. While the internet has proven to be a very helpful tool, especially for those who do not have a supportive environment or who have not yet come out, violence against LGBTI plus children and young people also takes place in cyberspace. Being cyberbullied, whether by classmates or by others the person knows or does not know, can be a devastating experience. This can include, among others, verbal abuse, disclosure of personal information, and unwanted outing. Unlike bullying at school or in other physical spaces, cyberbullying does not have an institutional timetable, so it also occurs in places that are considered safe, such as the home. On the other hand, cyberspace can also be a source of symbolic violence against LGBTI plus people as a whole, such as the transmission of disparaging discourses, images or videos. The display of material celebrating and encouraging attacks against members of the LGBTI plus community bears more serious consequences for the child's self-esteem. As we shall discuss in the upcoming modules, most countries have laws against hate crimes, including hate speech, including those based on sexual orientation, gender identity, and/or gender expression. Ensuring that all children have access to information on how to report hate crimes or where they can find information if they are victims of such crime not only provides potentially useful information, but also sends a clear message about the seriousness of the issue and the right of every person to be respected. Children spend an increasing number of hours using diverse media devices such as bedroom televisions, computers, video game consoles, and mobile phones. Access to the internet gives children the possibility to access diverse and unsupervised content. Media constitute an important source for children's identity and self-concept, providing information and models about social roles, identities, orientations, and practices. Therefore, social media plays a central role in children's building of a personal and social identity. Media can also bear a negative impact on children's self-image, self-esteem, and social practices, aspects that affect physical, psychological, and social health and well-being. It is important that agents such as parents, practitioners, teachers, the media, and policymakers become aware of the biopsychosocial impact of media on children's health and well-being. Many of the media characters and stories targeting children assume a heterosexual and cisgender audience. Media tend to offer a binary image of gender roles, overplaying stereotypes of femininity and masculinity. When LGBTI plus issues emerge, characters and plots are often associated with exceptional situations and events, alien to everyday life, usually in unfortunate stories that occur within family contexts or romantic relationships. The absence and negativity of characters and plots bears a major effect on the self-perception of LGBTI plus children and on their social relationships. Similarly, the media often identify LGBTI plus characters within programs and plots through socially shared stereotypes. This narrative device simplifies and reduces the multiple expressions of gender identities, expressions, and sexual orientations to a limited set of stereotypes. The limited number of reference points has implications for the self-perception of those LGBTI plus children who do not fit into media categories and also contributes to the construction of ideal identity models for children to identify themselves. An additional source of concern is children's increasing exposure to pornography, which can model their sexual behavior and expectations from an adult-centered perspective. Although this is an issue common to all children, the effect of pornography is especially pronounced for LGBTI plus children, due to fewer opportunities for sexual experiences and the absence of role models for sexual relationships. Lack of proper sex education that include an analysis of pornographic material may incite unrealistic sexual behaviors with potential negative effects on children's sexual and physical health. What's more, the sexualization of romantic relationships may push asexual children towards unwanted sexual relationships. We can provide empowering opportunities by openly discussing LGBTI plus media content with children and young people. There is also the possibility of jointly seeking out alternative content that is sensitive and inclusive, and that broadens the range of available reference points. As we have seen, cis-heteronormative beliefs and practices may lead to different forms of violence in different areas of children and young people's lives. Violence takes different forms in each specific context and threatens the freedom, self-concept, social relationships, and well-being of children and young people. It is imperative that we open up the conversation about these forms of violence to recognize and combat them from a human rights perspective. By doing so, we can empower children and young people, making it clear that they are not the problem and providing them with the necessary tools to defend their right to develop their gender and sexual identities.